welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is the best-selling author of the famed YA book series, Iron Afternoon. He's written 7 books and 3 novellas, and they're all based on them being a prequel to Steel Dawn. It's Adam Hodgins.
The prequel to Steel. I'm so excited about this podcast. I'm tripping with my words. But the secret to writing a good prequel to Steel Dawn is it's all about the nuances in the uniforms of these soldiers. That it's essentially just like vests and dirty pants.
Yep.
But that seems to be their uniform. So that it's all about getting the uniform right for these guys.
I mean, you've written 7 books and 3 novellas. I don't want people yelling at me on the, because, there's a difference. I do like that your novellas, one of them focuses on the sand people in the beginning.
Right.
Normally I hate backstories, Adam.
Okay.
But for some reason you really found the pathos.
I wanted people to watch Steel Dawn and really feel sympathy for these unsung heroes. I wanted to create a whole world underneath the sand with its own, these guys were the heroes of that world, and we never really see that come to fruition in the movie.
And, a lot of them get murdered.
Heinously.
I mean, they get wiped out by the Swayze.
Yes, they do. And so what I explore in my second novella is just Antichrist kind of status that the Swayze has among those people.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And then the third book is kind of like a sequel to Steel Dawn.
Right.
Wow.
It's called Steel Twilight.
And they try to get the water from them. And when they try to get the water, they just get wiped out again by Swayze.
Right. Well, because if sand people, not to be confused with the Tusken Raiders, but if sand people get into water, they just become mud men, and it just turns everything bad.
Yeah, I mean, they just flop. Are they alive puddles?
Well, remember in Hellboy when that guy with the sweet nightstick swords had like sand for blood?
Yeah,
that's kind of like that. I stole that motif for the basis of those novellas, and so yeah, water in the system really makes things just go flop.
Got it. Very interesting. Very, very. I love all your books. I'm looking forward to the 8th. I do think the adaptations that they made with Corey Feldman really didn't do your books justice. But,
no.
I mean, hopefully they reboot it. There's talk of it. So,
right. I was hoping they would get Swayze's brother to reprise the Swayze role.
Mm-hmm.
But out of respect for Steel Dawn, he declined.
Got it.
And we offered him hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, and a few Subway vouchers.
Yes.
Because they would just have to fly up to... they probably have to shoot on the beaches of the Great Lakes, probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Here in Canada, to shoot a post-apocalyptic desert film, we've got a solid, 3 weeks to get it done before the snow comes.
So it's just 15-hour days, 3 weeks.
Yeah, but then it really... you're not going to get better sand than Great Lakes beach sand.
Yeah.
But it's so rare.
I mean, it's untouched, this sand.
Yeah.
You know they had to stop having people put that sand in bottles? Because they were taking sand in bottles and taking them across the border of the states and selling it.
That makes sense. It's like the Texas snowballs.
Yeah. Take them up north and sell them?
Well, no, so this is like a real thing, unlike my novella. But, and I think it was 2006, it snowed in Texas. So these kids went out and got those plastic containers for autographed baseballs.
Yeah.
So they filled those with snow and put them in the freezer, and they were selling on eBay Texas snowballs for $3,000.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, they were geniuses.
They actually sold them?
Yeah, no, they actually sold them here.
Wow.
It's crazy, but, it's one of those things that it happened in a moment in time, and it'll never happen again, or it won't be as big the second time around, but these, two high school kids really just made a killing selling Texas snowballs.
That's awesome. All right. So
it's also a great name for a country band, the Texas Snowballs.
Oh, man, just like a outlaw country type band?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Take after, Blaze.
Blaze.
You know Blaze. Blaze. Yes. Yeah, that's an obscure one right there for you.
I love it though.
Get Ethan Hawke to play him. All right, so if it hasn't dawned on y'all yet, we're actually talking. Oh, that's a bat. I'm not punning right here. We're talking about Steel Dawn.
That was my favorite thing you've ever said. If it hasn't dawned on us.
So it didn't dawn on me that I was gonna say that. So that's why I like it even more. And this movie I'd never heard about. It's one of the Vestron Video releases from the 80s. So Vestron yes. Video released Chopping Mall, Wishmaster, Warlock, Chud 2, Return of the Living Dead 2, Beyond Reanimator, Slaughter High, Waxwork, Blood Diner, Alligator, Blast Fighter. I gotta watch Blast that. Fighter. And Killbots. And so this is one of their releases. And I did not know that this movie existed. And so when I asked you, because, you know, I picked Universal Soldier, I picked 13th Warrior, mm-hmm. and I was like, you know what, Adam, you pick one. I don't want this to just be me being like, hey, Adam, like, this is what we're podding about, you know, like, this is,
right.
you know, this is a pod, you know, we're open to each other's ideas. And immediately, before I didn't even finish the sentence, and you went, Steel Dawn. And I went, God bless you.
Right.
Because that sounds like a sneeze. No, not really. Right. You just said it so fast, but, maybe.
It's so fast, because it's so the only choice.
Yeah, and so I didn't know what it was, so I IMDb'd it. I found out that it's on Vudu for free, so I was happy.
Right. It's also on Tubi TV for free.
Ooh, is that Canadian?
I don't know if it's Canadian, but it's like what I call the Walmart of Netflix.
Tubi TV?
It's TUBI, and it's just like Netflix. It's the same, but it's free. There's no cost to it. And it's just like a bunch of random stuff, a lot of sequels, like – but like Third Rock from the Sun is on there. Like, it's yeah, it's just kind of like the Kmart version of Netflix. It's Ooh, hilarious.
Tubi. Well, I also, you know, the amount of research I do for my articles, I need yes. to know, because I can't pay for every subscription service. So I really do rely on sometimes like Crackle, YouTube, Vudu. So now I know about right. Tubi.
Tubi. It's all, and Tubi has like some obscure like 70s and 80s like horror films and stuff. But like all the like drive-in style movies are all on Tubi. So like I just watched Convoy last night.
Convoy?
Convoy with it's based on the C.W. McCall song about driving truck.
Nice.
And it stars Chris Christopherson.
Ooh, he's a good. Yeah. I buy him as a truck driver.
Oh no, it's actually it's hilarious. It's got Paulie from Rocky in it. What's his name?
Yeah. Meredith.
No, that's Mickey.
Oh, Mickey.
Burgess Meredith. Yeah, Burgess yeah. Meredith. And yeah, he plays like a cowboy truck driver. It's hilarious. It's but again, it's just like it's this kind of like Steel Dawn is the perfect movie to be on Tubi, if that makes any sense.
You know what blows my mind about Steel Dawn is, and we have a listener Everything. Question. We'll get to it later. But this movie, all right. So it was directed by Lance Houle, who also directed Missing in Action 2 and One Man's Hero. But he went on to produce, get this, Man on Fire.
Oh yeah.
Missing in Action, Club Dread, which I love, Flipper, and The Air Up There, and the one with the dude from Australia going to L.A., Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, or in California. Right. So, I mean, this dude has really produced some big films. And the writer is Doug Leffler, who was a director on Xena and Hercules in New Zealand. And he was also yep. a second unit director on Army of Darkness, the massive Spider-Man movie in A Simple Plan with Sam Raimi. But he went on to become a storyboard artist for Deadpool 2, Pacific Rim 2, Tomb Raider. Then he was the head of story for X-Men Days of Future Past, Hocus Pocus, and The Quick and the Dead. So these are two men who have a very long history in Hollywood. I mean, they're still...
Exactly.
Like, these guys made this movie. The problem is, the dude who directed it and the guy who wrote it, they, you know, they didn't really write or direct much after this movie.
No.
Now, the thing I want to – actually, I know I'm jumping into this, but I just want to say I had a lot of fun with this movie because it has a lot of personality.
Right.
But I feel like it was written in 3 days, filmed in six.
Yes.
And the set design in this movie probably cost $7.
So I'll say this. And I want to get some context over why I love this movie so much. But growing up as a kid in the 80s, we had like – In 89, we got Batman, and before that, we had the Superman movies, but we never really had superhero films to watch and get behind, because they weren't being made. And so the post-apocalyptic thing, I think, was the closest thing we got to having, like, otherworldly heroes that we saw. So I remember watching like Mad Max and getting like really behind that. And so then this movie came out the same summer as Dirty Dancing. So this is like Swayze at his like red hottest.
Oh, red hot. I mean, this guy, he should be in big budget affair. Like big, right? Big budget stuff.
And I think this as well. I think that when it comes to 80s leading men, there's a scale of action star where like Stallone and Schwarzenegger are at the top, and then heartthrob where you have like the good looking guys that the ladies like. And I think Swayze somehow is the perfect middle ground for that.
Yeah.
And so I remember my older sister and cousin renting this movie just because they also rented Dirty Dancing. Just for Swayze. And so then I saw the cover and there was a guy with a sword on it. And I was like, well, what's, can I watch this like otherworldly movie? And as a kid, it blew me away. But going back and revisiting it, there's a lot of problems with it, but I love it anyways. I don't care about the problems. I love it anyways. Like we could talk about the hair in this movie for 2 hours.
The villain's hair is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. No, not even hyperbole.
No, it's literally one of those, if you had a generic rock star Halloween wig, that's exactly what the hair is. It's like David Lee Roth's hair.
The main villain, so there's a main villain, but then there's like his dude that does all the his main, what, enforcer?
Right, I like, would say it's like Prince John and the Sheriff of Nottingham relationship.
I really liked that enforcer. I thought he had a code, and he performed in this movie. He, like, to steal from How Did This Get Made, he made decisions in this film that are bold.
Absolutely. And I'll say this. What you said about production design and script and all those flaws are there. Not one actor phoned it in.
No, like everybody... everyone gave their 100%. I mean, I know you call him Hulk Hogan.
The budget Hulk Hogan, Tark.
But I call him Fifth Element. So okay, Brian James, because he's also in Blade Runner, and he's in Tango and Cash and Red Scorpion in 48 Hours.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
Yeah, but so Fifth Element, he really gives it his all. My problem with this movie is, it's not even a problem, because I loved every second of it. I don't think Swayze had enough time to learn how to sword fight with his plastic sword, aluminum sword.
No.
Because it's obviously
every piece of metal.
That sword, I began to think that that wasn't a real sword, and he was just fighting with aluminum because he didn't want to kill people. But then he killed people, and I'm like, oh, well, this is a real sword. But
instead of them like ADRing steel clashing sounds, they just ADRed thin aluminum clashing sounds.
Thunk. I do love, though, that they, I don't think they had enough time to train him to actually sword fight. So this movie features a lot of him doing everything other than sword fighting. So he's very good at doing that sword flippy thing in a hand. You know, when you flip the little sword, he does that a lot. And he does a lot of spins.
A lot of somersaults.
A lot of somersaults, a lot of jumps, a lot of tuck and rolls.
Yeah.
He never has two, three sword clashes at one, like in one take. He'll just swing a sword, and then he'll do a beautiful roll and then stab a guy. Or he'll do like a dirty dancing move, and then he'll stab a guy.
I would say he got all the training for Steel Dawn fight scenes from the trainers of Dirty Dancing. Like, he just dance fights his way into the hearts of everybody in this movie.
He does. That's a perfect way to say it. He's basically if Ren from Footloose had a sword and was just running through people in that warehouse. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I will say it is kind of a cool sword.
Yeah.
I wish it was made of metal. that could be a t-shirt. I wish the sword were made of metal.
It was so light, his sword. Right? And then he kept tucking it under his armpit. I'm like, I don't think that's the best thing to do.
No, he would put it in a holster, but the blade would be up in his armpit. It just seemed like a very weird – but again
– it's aluminum.
I will say this. Post-apocalyptic movies like this are my absolute favorite genre. Questions asked. And I think what I love about them so much, and I think Mad Max did this really well, and I think this movie did it really well too, is that there's these cultural appropriations and there's these unique societal, nuances that never get explained and never have to get explained. It's just part of what it is, right? So like the way they say good deal and their greetings and even like their verbiage, in most movies there'd be the exposition about why that exists. But these post-apocalyptic movies seem to get away with just like, no, we don't need to explain why this world is the way it is. It just is. You got to buy into it.
Yeah.
And I thought this movie did that well, except for the placement of the sword.
And there is a scene where there's a tiny kid in the movie, and he goes, can I get a chocolate filling cake? And right? Swayze's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, wait, they have chocolate filling cakes? And then there's another scene, Adam, where a guy's eating a sandwich. Have you seen this scene?
A full-out Wonder Bread white bread sandwich.
So you saw that too?
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't just me like having a fever dream.
There was part of me that thought that he just went to the craft services and then brought the sandwich on the set and then just kept filming.
Okay. I'm so happy you saw that because I saw it. I wrote a note. I didn't have enough time to get back to it. And so in my head, I'm like, did I make that up? But there is a sandwich, a Wonder Bread sandwich in this movie.
100%. And I think that part of me says, like, they probably just say we don't have the money to reshoot that. But then I was like, maybe they didn't even have craft services on this. And he just brought that sandwich from home.
Yeah, I don't think they picked it up when they were first shooting. Maybe that guy was on a break and they just dragged him. Because there was about 8 extras in this movie.
There was. And just used again and again and again. And I'll say that when I said earlier that nobody phoned it in. Until the very last scene, I know we're jumping ahead, but when like the new workers come to the moisture farm and they're like, Tark was going to sell me a pig. Yeah, he'd be proud. There's this dialogue that doesn't need to be there. And it is just awful. And it's just the worst way to end this movie because you're in for the whole movie. And then this little scene comes. But even when it comes to like the leading lady who is Patrick Swayze's wife.
Yep.
I guarantee they got a 2-for-1 deal with those two.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, Swayze's like, if my wife can be in, like, I definitely know casting her was a monetary choice, and that they're like, you and your wife can come out to the, you know, Gobi Desert vacation for free, and you know, we'll crimp her hair like there's no tomorrow.
Yep.
And you know, you guys can be in a movie together. It'll make millions and millions of dollars. And you know, it didn't, but it did make a place in my heart.
And I do love when they finally kiss, the two of them just drop down immediately.
Well,
to imply, you know, they're gonna make love. But I just loved how they kissed and then they just kind of dropped, like the two out of the frame.
I want to say that next morning after they do the lay down kissing, I felt so bad for Tark.
Oh, dude,
because it was like.
Where's my notes? I wrote kisses a woman and they fall down quickly. But let's see. Where did I write about? Oh, I wrote Hulk Hogan has every right to be annoyed about being left out.
He's been working that farm, I'd say conservatively, 8 years.
Yeah. And they don't even let him come inside.
No. And Swayze's there a red hot minute. And she's like, come on in, Swayze. We need to get some things accomplished.
And Tark gets ditched.
And then they play it off in the morning like it's no big deal. And Tark's all upset and like, what's the matter with you, Tark? Like, come on, buddy. What's the problem? And it's just
In all caps, I wrote, why do they leave him out of the picture? Poor guy.
Yeah. No, he is. And then Swayze the next day kind of like talks him into going and stealing a water pump from the marauders, and they all think that's a great idea, which ends up getting Tark killed from the aftermath.
Yes, it does.
And so in the grand scheme of things, Swayze shows up, does some hot night work with this lady, solidifies that, you know, Tark has clearly been pining for her for years and years and years. He says, not only, Tark, is she not interested in you, I right away am gonna get with her. You're gonna die, and then I'm gonna leave.
It's like poor.
It's the ultimate high school jock situation.
And I love when they go steal the water pump, which is a question we have later about throwing rocks. We'll do that after the break.
But love it.
So they go, they steal it, which is kind of fun. They bring it back. Everyone laughs about it. But everyone immediately goes to Swayze and they're like, you're the man, Swayze. You're the man. You did it. You stole it. And Tark's like, I was there. I was beating people up. So then they drag Swayze
away. He
didn't
do it by himself.
Yeah, and all Swayze said was, I didn't do it by myself. But then everyone drags him away and he's like, who cares? And they completely forget about Tark.
No. Tark gets no love in this movie whatsoever.
And Swayze does him dirty. Real dirty.
He does him dirty dancing.
And then Tark goes down kind of like a chump later on.
He does. Well, Tark had no business getting in the middle of that fight. I do think that was Tark's fault.
Got it. I mean, I guess if, you know, Mike Tyson and, Evander Holyfield in their primes were boxing, and I was trying to help out Evander Holyfield, I would get destroyed by Tyson immediately.
Right.
This is
Tark's a strong guy, but he has no business in this kind of staff fighting they're doing.
Yeah, he's a meaty brawler. Wait, bar brawler.
Right. I don't know what a ball brawler is, but I don't want to get involved with one of those guys.
If you got into a bar brawl with him, he would be the guy who picks you up on the table on the bar and just like sweeps you up, pulls you all the way down on it. Does that make sense?
So here's the thing. If Tark was in Roadhouse, he could have helped out Swayze.
Oh, yeah. He'd have been a great bouncer.
Right?
Yeah.
A great bouncer.
But
so, yeah. So
when
yeah,
it comes to bo staff fighting.
Right.
Plastic bo staff fighting.
Oh, so much plastic swords and bo staffs and just all the weapons.
In the armpits.
I do need to say that. The main enforcer, his code killed as many of the villains as Swayze did. They were trying to help out and he just killed them. Like, yep. Don't help me out. And I kind of loved that.
I loved his hair. I love that he had a knife in his knee. He had a knife that popped out of his knee in which he used to kill a guy.
Yeah.
Then
no fooling around.
Legit, you're right. Henchmen are trying to help him, and he kills them because they try to help him.
More than one occasion.
Why? Well, you know what though? That's Tark's fault. Well, that's the henchmen's fault. Because
they need to know.
You and I are henchmen. All right, Adam.
I would love that.
We've been around for 3 to 5 years in the sand. We kind of know the deal, right? So we've been around. A lot of henchmen have kind of bit the dust. So we have seniority. Like, we're like the supervisor henchman. We're not like the boss.
Be the name of my autobiography, Supervisor Henchman.
And, you know, we see the main guy. I forget his name. I'm just going to call him Hare. Hare is fighting Swayze, and Hare's losing. We're not jumping in. We'll tell, we'll be like, hey, Hank, Steve, you go in. And then he'll kill them. That'll break up the fight. And we're not running in. So that's their fault for running in and getting killed by Hare, right?
We get to live to fight another day, and so does our enforcer.
Yeah, but not the other two new guys.
The henchman supervisor is really just Operation Human Shield. Is you pick who's going to go down swinging.
Yeah, like we're kind of HR / hiring / Operation Human Shield.
Oh, henchman HR. That could be a fantastic television show.
Well, so you're going around this world. There's nothing but sand. There's sand people stealing your sandwiches. And so you've got to pitch. You have to pitch henchmen, Adam. So, hey, man, you're not doing anything here. You're in this village. There's not much water. In 6 months' time, the water will be gone. And then those little sand fellows will come and eat you. So come work for us. You'll get some square meals.
Like square sandwiches.
Yeah, square, literally.
Wonder Bread sandwiches.
Square sandwiches. And you can fight with us. You can have great hair. You can have a vest. You can have pants. We'll give you a plastic sword. All we ask is that when our main henchman is getting beat up, you go help him. Oh, that sounds great.
And here's the thing that I always get puzzled by. In a world like this where there's humans and then there's sand people, why are the humans fighting? Like, what are they fighting over?
They could. Yeah, there's no reason to fight.
Like, just band together. So you got water? Great. Let's all have water together. We need to fortify against these sand people because they're crazy.
Who obviously have a vast tunneling system.
Oh.
You and I. Remember a few years ago when you and I tried to mimic this and we tried to dive into the Canadian sand during the 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We got, 2 feet in a half hour?
No, it was a bad situation.
I mean, I think I pulled my shoulder. You heard
My
a.
fingernails were a mess.
Yeah. We didn't get far.
No. But again, I want to see the movie about those sand people. I know we joked about my novellas, but that's again, it's this thing that's never explained, but it's okay because it's this post-apocalyptic world, and that's just part of living here. There's these people that pop out of the sand and steal your backpack while you're doing a headstand in the middle of the desert.
Oh yeah, let's go back. This is the first scene of the movie. So Swayze's
It
upside
opens
down,
with Swayze doing a headstand.
and these sand creatures come out, and he kicks one of them in the head. And so they tried to work diversionary tactics, which is smart of them. So they wanted to get him away from that bag. But they
Right.
get seven of them wiped out. They go underneath. Swayze's like, they're gone. One of them grabs a bag. Swayze gets it back. More sand people come up. And I want to tell you something, Adam.
Talk to me.
My favorite part in this movie
I love this.
is one of the sand people just pulls back, I think, a left hand and just wallops Swayze in the face. Like, we are talking like
Haymaker.
a haymaker, let's call it the detonator. I
Oh,
mean, this
yeah.
thing just it just wallops.
Here's the thing.
It wallops Swayze.
I know exactly the punch you're talking about.
It wallops him in the face so
Right.
hard. Like Swayze, oh, I feel like Swayze's head might go flying off. And Swayze went down too, right?
So I have a theory that that was one of those. I'm sorry that that was a real punch, but it looks so good we're going to keep it in the movie situations. Like, yeah.
He walloped Swayze, man.
Just destroyed him. But Swayze gets his revenge and he ends up killing most of these sand people and getting his backpack back. And then he walks into this town where he just happens to run into his old buddy,
Yeah, a guardian.
a guardian. So that's the thing what these soldiers are called, is they're called.
A
So there
peacemaker,
was
peacemaker.
peacemakers. So there was a war at some point in time. And so the good guys who, I don't think anybody wins a war when it's a post-apocalyptic movie, but the good guys of the war, the winners, are these guys called peacekeepers. And they have very, like, no armor. They have a sort of a vest-ish thing and some dirty pants, and that's their uniform. And they have a very short sword with a smaller sword hidden blade in the handle.
Yep.
That's kind of their outfit. And so here's a question for you, Mark.
Yeah.
If I had to ask you, what's Swayze's purpose before he meets this guy? What would you say he's trying to accomplish with his life right now?
Nothing. I feel like he's just walking around doing yoga. He doesn't have a
He's
job.
doing nothing.
Nothing. He's not an outlaw. He's not a peacemaker. He's not a former peacemaker who's running from the peacemakers. He's not a bounty hunter. He should have been a bounty hunter for sand people.
Yeah.
And so he
No.
didn't. What if this? He's like, I've killed so many people, and now I've killed so many sand people. I just don't want to kill anymore. But he goes to this moisture farmer's place, and he has to kill more, like Shane or Unforgiven.
Right. So this is Star Wars meets Shane. We need to say that.
Yes, it
Like it's there's eerie comparison. Like he goes to a moisture farm with this like a blonde-haired kid.
He's axing away at something.
Yeah, and it's like his dad was killed. Like there's just a lot going on there. But then he goes there and I think he's unnecessarily secretive.
There's no reason for him to be secretive.
But he's just like, who are you? Well, we'll have to wait and see. What are you doing here? I don't know yet. How long are you staying? Can't be known. Like he wants to work at this moisture farm where this woman has her son, and he won't tell her anything. It's like the worst job interview ever.
Yeah, I'd be like, listen, we need help, but I gotta hire reliable staff. I can't train you. Like, Tark's already overworked as it is. And just because you walk in here with your sleeveless shirts and dirty pants, sashaying like Patrick Swayze, I can't trust you. Do
No.
you have a
And there's.
resume? You have a plastic sword? What's the deal?
But again, he doesn't tell her that he's a peacemaker. He hides that, and then they find his sword and steal it from him because they don't trust him. But in the moment where she steals his sword because she doesn't trust him, he's out in the field with her son. You know, so I don't know. There's just some logic problems here I didn't see as a kid. I see now and I forgive them because I have such a fondness for this movie. But
I love this movie.
It's pretty great.
You got to go into it, though. So I didn't go into this looking to make fun of it because I trusted you. So I figured you saw this maybe when you were younger and you like it. So I wasn't just going to be like, oh, I'm going to watch this for ironic laughs. I watched this seriously. And I had a lot of fun with it, but like that punching scene, other moments, I wrote notes in all caps. I wrote, dude has a knife come out of his knee, exclamation part, Arnold Vosloo. He kisses a woman and they fall down quickly. Dude has hammer for fists.
Right.
I wrote that about the sand guy.
Hammer for fists. It's so good.
And I put little rascals during the chase scenes because they look like the little soapbox cars that the little rascals make.
Those wind racer things, I firmly believe that Lucas stole the pod racer plot line for episode one from this.
You and I could walk alongside these wind racers.
Without breaking a sweat, and we're in the desert, Mark.
You and I could walk faster than them.
There's one scene where a dog is walking beside it when they're racing around, and the dog is keeping up. Like, it's not that they're trying to hide the fact.
These are not long-range vehicles either.
No, and they make that, like, wobble, 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 like this weird wobbly sound.
But there's nothing wobbling, and there's no solar energy. There's some crystals. Do the crystals get solar, and that's why they run?
I don't know. I think the crystals are for time travel. I'm not sure.
Are they pedaling? How do these things work? Are they just towed by a truck?
Yeah, I think it's – again, I go back to we don't need to understand how this world works. We just need to trust that it does. And there's a method for it because he says, I'm building a wind racer. He said that. And then Swayze says, well, I can help you with that. Now, Swayze can help build a wind racer, but he can't plant a flower. We saw that as well. He's planting his flowers too close together, and they weren't going to bloom, so they had to give him some farming lessons. But no, these are not high-speed, long-range vehicles. These are, again, very much – I think Alpha in his soapbox racer would have beat the wind racers across the desert.
You and I rolling on the ground could beat these.
But again, now, I do want to say I have a theory written down here to do with the metal in this movie. Because not only the swords and the bow staffs, but...
The carts?
Like, the carts, the water pipe, the pump. Like, I have a feeling that every metal in this movie is made of, like, recycled pop cans.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Easily.
Like, in this future world, the only thing they have is, like, Chinese pop metal.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's going to be flimsy and a little bit sharp when it needs to be, but it's not going to, because that when the bandits come and vandalize like the water pump, they crush that metal like they're the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, it's like aluminum foil.
It is aluminum foil. And I don't know, I think this movie must have been like just a riot to work on, because I feel like they were like duct taping things together right before the camera panned over to them. Like, I feel like there was prop guys running out of scene just to make sure that they weren't caught on camera. I feel like it was that kind of budget, and I think that brings a crew closer together.
We need this cart to go 10 more feet. Can you get it there for us?
Right. 100%.
You want to hear something funny, though, from one of my production stories? I'm going off topic. So I was working on Anchorman 2, and I was responsible for getting – there's four of us, and we were given all these taxi cabs and cars from whatever the 1970s, 1980s to drive around Woodruff Park in Atlanta to make it look like a busy New York City street. So for a week, I got to watch all the fight scenes, but I was in charge of all these cars. And one time a car, since they were older, shut down. And it would have been stuck right in the frame, and they had to redo it, and they had some massive names. So I ran up alongside it. The camera didn't get me. I put my hand on the driver's side window and, like, the side of the thing, and I ran with it, like a taxi cab, to keep it moving past the frame while the driver just pretended like he was still driving. So there's me on the side, you know, huffing and puffing to push that thing out of the way. So that was
that's
just
all that Tough Mudder training is to get ready for Anchorman 2.
Yeah, just pushing the cars around.
That's amazing. But I feel like there's people out of scene pushing these wind racers around because they can't be propelled on their own.
They were being towed by a truck. They had to have been. There had to have been some filament pulling them. There's
also,
nothing.
I thought it was a big funny reveal that like this kid's like, oh, I'm building a wind racer. And Swayze's like, oh, that's cute. And I took that to be very much like a kid building a soapbox racer. But then the villains are using these as their main like transport.
You know, these villains don't move very quickly.
No. So here's the thing. How far do you think the villain's main base of operations was from this moisture farm?
1.6 miles.
Minimum. Maximum. They are next door neighbors. They need to be. With the fluidity between which they travel back and forth and back and forth.
Because they don't have vehicles, really.
No.
And there's no water, so you can't have too many horses, right?
No, and then when they steal that pump, there's like they're on that trailer and they're like moving it with their like it's I don't know. To me, it just seems like they're next door neighbors. It's kind of like neighboring feuding neighbors is what it really is.
And then a Morton Joe comes in and gets control of the water source.
Oh, you just blew my mind. Imagine that's how he gets his water. He just steals it from Patrick Swayze's wife.
Yep, it's from Steel Dawn.
Oh, man, we got to write a script that bridges these two worlds together.
Now, I do want to say one thing that really impressed me about this is how well they used all the sand. Because there are people get sand thrown in eyes, people get sand kicked at them. There's a bunch of sand bags. Listen, if you and I live in the desert, right, we have our families out in the desert, we're making sandbags as walls.
Oh, 100%.
And that's 100%. What they did in this movie. They really sandbagged the heck out of everything.
They did, and I want to say they did a good job creating the world. And I know the metal was really cheap, and I can't – in a movie called Steel Dawn, there was not one steel item.
Not one.
In any of the movie.
Mm-mm.
Tin at best. but Tin Dawn's not going to sell any tickets. But I do think they really committed to the world. And I think, again, the reason why – this movie, like, it doesn't hold up, but it is watchable. It's because those actors were just like, they believed what they were saying.
Self-consciousness to the portrayals. And there was a lot of scaffolding in this, which I appreciated. That seemed like that could have been where the steel was, in the scaffolding.
In the
steel pipe.
Right. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think they used steel to make ovens to make the sweet cakes as well.
Oh, yeah. That's what they were, sweet cakes?
I think they said a chocolate filled cake one time, and one time he wanted a sweet cake. She was always asking for cakes.
Now, I wrote a note down. I don't remember where I wrote this. Some guy wrote, I've never seen anyone so fast. We should have killed him when he was in the bath.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where Patrick Swayze, after he gets the lovin', and he finds out that they're essentially living on top of Waterworld, there's... In this desert where nothing grows, underneath his house is, you know, Lake Superior. He's then bathing out in the middle of nowhere. And these raiders come and, like, start smack-talking while he's in the bathtub. And Patrick Swayze does not bat an eye. He commands that situation. Like, he just, like, smacks.
That's what it is, yeah.
He's laying naked in the bath with guys all around him, and he's just, like, telling them off. It's amazing.
I love that guy. He's like, man, we should have killed him in the bathtub. Right. Hindsight's 2020, right?
Right. And again, I think Swayze in these movies, in a lot of his movies, has to have a thing. So like in Roadhouse, it was, I thought he'd be bigger.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's very much like, well, he's so fast. He's so, watch him, he's too fast. And I don't think he was that small in Roadhouse. I don't think he was that fast in this movie.
I mean, he's not even a good sword fighter. He's a dance fighter.
I would say the other guy, like the main enforcer, was way better. Like he was bigger and he was faster and he was a better fighter than Swayze.
And he does say, if you mess with me again, I'll cut your head off to a guy.
He does say.
So I have a theory. If you want to listen to our Jerky Antics of Michael Myers podcast, and in that I have a theory why Busta Rhymes was so successful with this kung fu against Michael Myers. And okay. I'm going to tie this into this movie. So
I love it.
In the Halloween franchise, people are just swinging haymakers at Michael Myers. right?
Right.
And everyone's missing. Like, they just, like, Haymaker, Michael can block, anybody could block those all day. However, in Halloween Resurrection, when Busta Rhymes throws a kick, Michael Myers looks lost. He is thinking to himself, nobody has ever kicked me. No right. one has ever spun kicked me. So he has no idea what to do. So in Steel Dawn, Swayze isn't that fast and he isn't that big, but he's dance fighting.
He's somersaulty.
So you are a trained warrior, Adam, and you okay. are used to combat with other trained warriors. So, you know, right. block, parry, swing, duck, like you train technical fighting.
I know what to expect.
Yeah, and so, you know, you can kind of telegraph other armies. You know what people are training. Like, oh, that guy is from the northern desert. He practices Krav Maga. Like, I'll battle him with this.
I like that your pull was Krav Maga.
Like Jason Bourne. So when Swayze comes at you with his dance moves and twists and spins and somersaults, you're lost.
I am lost.
You have been trained to expect the expected. So when the unexpected comes, you don't know how to block it. And the next thing you know is a plastic sword wipes you out.
Right.
What do you think? Think that's why that's why it's so effective?
I think your theory is good. I think the one pinhole I put in it is that they have the same training.
Well, maybe he adapted it. That's what he was doing when he was gone.
Okay, yes. Because you don't see Metal Hair ever doing a triangle on the ground headstand.
Never. He would never do
never.
It.
Never. I think that was my favorite scene rewatching this is when that kid's like, I want to learn to be a great fighter. And Swayze's like, you need to learn how to meditate, which I don't think that's true. But he says it, and then the kid says, how do you meditate? And then instead of just saying, well, you got to think about just like just you thinking and concentrating, he says, you got to draw a triangle on the ground. And I was like, you got to meditate by drawing a triangle on the ground? And then he teaches this kid how to do it, like a teddy bear stand. And the kid can't do it. He keeps falling over, and maybe the most awkward thing I've ever seen. But I think that was supposed to be like this big bonding moment. And it just, I don't know, just for some reason, it just killed me watching it again, where he's just this kid and they're trying to learn how to meditate by standing on their heads. It was incredible.
And it's really bad, too, because, you know, let's say you and I are yoga instructors, right? We're right. not going to have people do the hardest things immediately.
No.
Like, we're going to work them into, you know, shavasanas and different stretches and all this kind of stuff. We're not just going to be like, now stand on your heads.
Right.
Right? So he's a horrible teacher.
Right. And then, but that ties into the end when, so he eventually kills everybody who's bad. And then when they could really use his help at the moisture farm, because they're going to irrigate the whole valley, he leaves. He just...
Why does he leave? His life is good for him.
Things are coming up Swayze. And he says, I don't belong here. And he pieces out. And so then young Anakin Skywalker grabs his backpack and like chases him out. And he says, I want to come with you. You never taught me how to be a fighter. And he looks at the kid and he says, you don't need to be a fighter. You need to help your mom farm. And he says, but I want to be just like you and Tark and my dad. The kid says, I want to be like you, Tark, and my dad. And Swayze says, no. No, you don't want to be like your dad. And then he says, you want to be... What was his name? The kid's name was like...
Young Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. Says, that's who you want to be like. I'm like, but that kid's 8. He doesn't want to be like that. Like, you don't need a role model, kid. Just be yourself. Like, that was the opportunity he had. In that moment, he could have taken his Illum sword, stuck it in the ground and walked back in to the farm as a new man. But with the whole idea of don't be a fighter, just be a farmer, we've forgotten that there's sand creatures that are definitely going to attack this farm in the near future.
Oh, they know there's water. They're making moves.
Right. They're coming for it. And so you want to train this kid to fight because his mom's going to be eaten in her sleep by a sand person. And within the week after this movie ends.
He comes back and everyone's gone and sand party people. Wait, all the sand people have turned into mud?
Right.
Wait, that's a good place to battle him, though.
Oh.
Maybe he should have given him a heads up. Listen, sleep with water near you. Buy a waterbed.
just place glasses of water around your house and then hit them with a baseball bat when these guys attack.
Swing away.
Oh.
What a Signs reference.
Patrick Swayze comes back in 3 weeks. Everybody's dead. And little Anakin Skywalker has written in blood in his room, "You did belong here." And he's like, and then he dies. Yeah, no, him leaving did not make any sense.
And because he doesn't really want to fight. He wasn't a fighter before he went there.
No.
And a lot of these movies were like Searchers, right? Where John Wayne walks away.
Right. Or Shane.
Shane. Like in Searchers, John Wayne spent years of his life hunting down, trying to reclaim Natalie Wood. People right. died. He kind of lost his soul. He lost who he was. And so at the end, when he walks away from that, he was just a broken man.
Right.
So he earns his walk away. Shane, when Shane leaves, Shane earns, because the father's still around in Shane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to stay because the father's around. So Shane's like, I'm going to move on because that's what's right. In this one, there's no husband.
I would say, like, Rambo in Rambo 2 and 3 earns his walkaways.
Exactly, like, because you've been there, you've done, but this one, there's no, like, husband. He hasn't been doing anything for years. He hasn't hunted down somebody for years. His mission hasn't been accomplished. And sand people are coming.
Definitely coming. They're definitely 100% coming.
Does he think all of them are going to slow him down and that's why he's ducking out?
I don't know. I don't know what he's – I think he's just on to the next single mother he can find.
Oh, brother. All right. Hey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more Steel Dawn. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I love this movie. I'm very happy. I'm telling you, I think this is probably the most I've ever laughed during a podcast recording. I almost cried talking about the sand person punching somebody.
We'll call it the sand punch.
So he's like Thomas Hayden Church from Spider-Man 3.
Oh, yes. He stole it from this movie.
Yeah, the now, sand punch.
You're talking about the director and the producer and the writer and all this of this movie, but the composer of this movie was Brian May, not from Queen, the other Brian.
I was going to say, what?
But he also famously did the soundtrack to Mad Max and The Road Warrior. So this is like his genre is sandy war zones.
Just lots of sand.
Yeah.
He did a good job.
Really score sand. No, and again, like, music is good, and I think the dialogue is that we could spend some more time doing some dialogue. And I don't know if that's just Swayze not doing his thing, but I thought the villain had some good lines. The main villain kind of changed the scenery a little bit, larger than life, and I like that a lot. And again, I like the world they created. I don't know. I just really enjoyed this movie, and part of it's because of the genre, part of it's because watched it as a child, part of it's because Swayze just has some kind of like likable quality.
Do you think he wanted to be there?
So I have a theory that this movie was shooting before Dirty Dancing broke.
Oh, for sure.
And I think Swayze was definitely like, I need to take the jobs I can get. I think if he's offered this script a year later, either he says no or the budget doubles.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think this is like a case of so Renee Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey were in that Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new generation?
They sure were.
And then they hit big with, what, A Time to Kill and some other movies, and mm-hmm. they fought the studio to not release it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's kind of – he couldn't do it because it hit the shelves.
Right. I think in the hindsight, I think he doesn't celebrate this movie or didn't celebrate this movie.
Do you think – which actors had a year like this with Dirty Dancing, which was massive, massive film, and then mm-hmm. this movie? Has there been an actor that's huge and a dud?
Well, would you say that Swayze's had a better film than Dirty Dancing reception-wise?
Ghost, because Whoopi Goldberg won an Oscar for that, right?
Yeah, I guess Ghost would be the one.
Not Roadhouse, not Black Dog.
Not Roadhouse.
People liked him in Donnie.
Black Dog, though. Oh,
You could Black Dog it?
I could talk all day about Black Dog.
I've never watched Black Dog.
Dude, it's got Randy Travis in it.
That's a selling? That's the
and
sell?
Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah. Meatloaf. Did you ever... All right, so speaking of bad sword fighting, there, I think it's a sword fight between Meatloaf and Michael Madsen in Blood Rain, where they're both either just so drunk or hungover that they only swing one swing each. And that's all... I think that's all they could do in that movie was one swing each.
Yeah. Well, so we saw... So I used to live in a little town called Brecon.
Mm-hmm.
And in like southern Ontario... we have a casino called Casino Rama. And so it's right outside Brecon. So outside this little town, there's this casino where we get all the casino acts. And so a few years ago, Meatloaf was there.
Whoa.
Right around the time that In the Name of the King 2 came out, Meatloaf was at Casino Rama. And so apparently he like nearly had a heart attack halfway through the set.
Oh, that's the video I watched.
Yeah. So he was just so like out of shape and just unable to sing because he was. And so I think that when you put someone like Meatloaf in a movie and sing now sword fight, you're not going to get a sword fight. You're going to get Meatloaf just barely standing up.
It was painful. Like, so I don't like movies that I like movies that are when they're. That they're not like exploitative.
Right.
Have you ever watched Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li?
I have.
Now, for years, I have just basically revered the performance that Chris Klein did in that film. I felt like it was next level. I thought he made a conscious decision to play that, but then I listened to the commentary and he was 100% earnest about his performance.
Right.
And I was like, I can't watch this movie ever again because I would feel terrible making fun of it.
Right.
So that's why I had a hard time making fun of that Blood Rain scene, because I'm like, I just feel bad for these guys.
No, exactly. So anyways, to answer your question about has anybody had a year where a summer where it's been a flop and a hit? So I would say that Rambo Part 2 is the quintessential Rambo movie. I would say that... First Blood, the first one, is a better movie, but I think when you think about the character Rambo, you think Rambo Part 2.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That, when he goes out with the bow and arrows and just lights everybody up.
That same summer, Rhinestone was released.
Oh, brother.
So I would say maybe that year where he went from a country music singing movie with Dolly Parton and also Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Can I maybe, I'm not trying to one up you here, but I think I have one you might like. 1994, Arnold Schwarzenegger, True Lies, James Cameron, action epic, shows Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of playing a dork, really acting with the family. That scene with Jamie Lee Curtis, like he showed a really different range to his performance. True Lies is an A+ action film. Then he went and did Junior, where he gives a baby. Where he has a baby with Danny DeVito.
Right.
That's a big swing.
That's a big swing.
I mean, what would you say, whose swing do you appreciate more, Rhinestone and Rambo or True Lies and Junior?
So I want to say this. I want to say Junior is a different kind of movie than True Lies. But I think it was done as well as that movie could have been done.
Got it. It was a bad idea.
Rhinestone, but it was done okay.
Yeah, gotcha. The production.
Rhinestone, right. I remember watching Rhinestone and thinking, okay, this is a music movie and they have a formula they follow. So it's going to be very, very bad. And then his final performance is going to be exquisite and he's going to get there. Because the whole idea of Rhinestone is Dolly Parton takes a bet that she can't make Stallone, who's a cab driver, a country singer. Have you seen the movie?
I have not.
Okay. It's amazing. And how, like, yeah, it's awful, but it's also amazing. But the last performance where he comes out and sings, like, Stallone can't sing. Like, he can't. And so it's awful. But the crowd's like, yeah, he's so good. And they win the contest. And but he literally can't sing.
Wait, is Rhinestone, like, the opposite of She's All That?
Yes. Yes, I would say yes. that's a great way to put it.
but once you take off her glasses, she's pretty. But in this one, once you have him sing, he's not a good singer.
Right. He can't sing. He sings a song called Drinkenstein about beer, turns into a monster. And the big joke in the movie is when he says to Dolly Parton, "Hey, you, come back to my house. I'm going to show you my big organ." And then his dad, like, works at a funeral parlor and has a large pipe organ. And that's like, the funny joke in the movie. Yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, I got to listen to this Drinkenstein. I don't want to watch a movie, but I'll listen to Drinkenstein. Okay. So we forgot to answer a listener question that we had from earlier, because I like, you know us, man, we just let our stuff flow, and I didn't want to interrupt
our stream of consciousness.
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt that with a question about throwing rocks. But in this movie, Tark and Swayze, they go to steal this whatever converter, and Swayze just chucks a rock via like a little leather thing, and he whaps a dude in the head with a rock. Perfect throw. So right. that led me to ask you, what are your favorite cinematic rock throwing moments? And I wrote an article about this back in the day, and it like blew up. And so when you type in best rock throwing in movies, films, and flicks is the first thing that pops up. I've cornered the market on this. So now we're going to do it even more.
So I haven't Googled it because I wanted this to be right from the heart and right from the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, the Braveheart rock throw scene is maybe the best one ever.
I gotta get rid of that one, because that's part when he whaps Brendan Gleeson right in between the eyes.
But Brendan Gleeson throws a boulder at him.
Yep.
And then he just throws that little one and knocks him out. I should have remembered the rock. It's so good.
Sorry to interrupt. But I love Gibson when he just kind of eyeballs where he should throw the rock, and it's a perfect throw.
Absolutely.
What a great moment. What else you got?
That is good. There was a movie, like a teenage comedy. I think it might have been She's All That. It was one of those movies where he's trying to throw rocks on the window of the girl, and it just blows the window and smashes it everywhere.
Not another teen movie, probably.
Right. That's what it was. And I remember just like in a movie where the laughs are forced and you're not into them, that made me crack. That one, I was like, oh, that's, they did that well.
Yeah.
Because I've never been one who's like, oh, I'm gonna go to my girlfriend's house and to get her attention, throw rocks at her window. I never got that trope of, does anybody actually do that, or is that just a thing that happens in movies and we just assume it really happens sometimes? It
has to be. I've never heard of that. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but it's definitely one of those movie tropes.
Yeah.
Before we get on, I just want to run. There's two quotes that I love in Not Another Teen Movie. When he goes, "Let's make like a tree and branch."
Mm-hmm.
And then when he goes, "I have a secret," secrapt. So he just spells out C-crapped.
Right.
Like that's a good bit.
No,
but that's
exactly.
That's a good poll, though, man. That's a very good rock poll right there.
So what are your favorite cinematic rock movies?
All right. So in Mom and Dad Save the World.
Okay.
Have you seen this movie?
I haven't.
Very weird movie. It's about these mom and dad people who go to, I think they go to another planet to rescue their kids from John Lovitz. And there's an entire scene
where
John Lovitz talks to two of his guards, and he walks up to him and he goes, "Mutton chops or sideburns?" And it's one of the two, just kind of bear with me here. Or goatee. And one of the guys was like, "Mutton chops?" And he's like, "No, shoot yourself." And then he walks up to the other guy, "Mutton chops or goatee?" And the same guy goes, "Mutton chops." He's like, "No, shoot yourself." But there's a scene in the movie where it's Kathy Ireland and I think the dude from Wayne's World, who's one of the singers in the car. Like, you know, one of his, you know, if you saw him, you would know who he is.
The guy who's going to spew?
Yeah. No, not that guy. He's one of the dudes in the back seat. Wayne and Garth are in the front. The guy who's going to spew is in the middle of the back.
In the back middle.
Yeah. So he's either on back passenger or back driver, one of those guys.
Right.
And mom and dad are there. And he goes, "This is a rock." And they're like, "Well, yeah, we know it's a rock." I'm like, "It's a rock." He's like, "This is what you do with it." He's like, "You take this rock and you pull it back like this. And then you throw it forward." He's like, "And that's throwing a rock." But then in the background, the rock just trucks a guy in the head.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, it's a really good bit about throwing rocks. There's a scene in The Incredibles that I love where Mr. Incredible like wipes out a henchman from easily 100 yards. Mm-hmm. Laser throw. Perfect rock throw. I can't find a gif for it, which kind of bums me out. I also love how in Hobbit and Fellowship of the Ring, the hobbits can throw rocks so hard that 400-pound Uruk-hai go off their feet and die. I mean, they're pinpoint rock throwers.
That's some strength there.
I mean, you know, if you hit me with a rock, I would be very hurt or I would just drop. Do you think you could throw a rock that hard to make me fly off my feet?
And I'm a strong rock thrower, and I don't think I could do that.
So are we to assume that hobbits are powerful?
No, I think we're to assume they're not watching the movies, but maybe that's their one skill. Like, you know, Napoleon Dynamite's got sweet computer hacking skills.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe hobbits just have sweet rock throwing skills.
I mean, they're deadly with them.
Right.
I got a couple more in Tremors when they throw the rocks on the ground to trick the monster.
Yep.
That's smart.
That's smart.
I like Fred Ward has very good rock throwing skills. Kevin Bacon, not so much.
Okay, but Kevin Bacon's got other skills.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, 6 degrees of him. He's a 6 degree black belt.
Remind me to come back to it. I have a Kevin Bacon question for you.
Dig it. I have Amelie. She does a great job throwing stone, skipping stones in the nice whimsical film of hers. Mm-hmm. Shatner throws a beautiful boulder in Star Trek when he's fighting that giant lizard.
Yep.
And then there's the scene in Life of Brian by Monty Python where they're about to stone a guy for saying Jehovah. Because then they're like, blasphemy. And the guy's like, stop saying Jehovah. Then he gets rocked. And
that's
so
amazing.
Like, then it becomes this weird thing where they don't know who to throw rocks at. And then they're actually all women and it's only supposed to be men. And so it's a bunch of men playing women who are playing men. And then just a bunch of people get hit with rocks because they keep saying the wrong words. And it's just more of like a play on words, but rocks are used comically. So those are my favorite rock throwing moments.
Okay, so last we spoke, I talked about a movie called Blind Fury.
Yeah. I watched the trailer and it blew my mind.
So in that movie, Brendan calls being a little jerk to Rutger Hauer, who's blind. And so he takes a rock and he says, hey, I'm sorry, I've been mean to you. Do you want a piece of candy? And so then Rutger Hauer says, well, thank you. And now he's blind. So Brendan Call gives Rutger Hauer a rock and tells him it's candy. Rutger Hauer puts it in his mouth, and then he gets into his comic mode, pretends to swallow it, and the kid starts laughing, and then he just spits the rock right between the kid's eyes.
That's great.
And it's an amazing moment.
That's a good rock spitting moment. That's probably in the top five of rock spitting moments.
It is great. Now, to piggyback on Rutger Hauer for a second, because again, we have the stream of consciousness thing. You talk about a good year with hits and a flop.
Yeah.
In 2005, Rutger Hauer was in both Sin City and Batman Begins.
Oh.
And also Dracula 3 Legacy as Count Dracula, and it is not a good movie at all.
So he's in two very good movies.
When Sin City came out, it blew my mind.
Oh, yeah. I remember bought it. I bought it, and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever made.
Yeah. It was so unlike anything I'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I went and saw Sin City with my friend, and then I drove home and got my wife and then took her to go see The Late Show because I was like, you got to see it. It's
that's
so
awesome.
Good. Yeah. But so
– Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Bacon, who do you think would win in a dance sword fight match in 1987? Kevin Bacon or Patrick Swayze?
Okay. If it was a fist fight, the punch dancing of Kevin Bacon would win easily.
Right.
But, I mean, Swayze can handle a sword in his armpit and not cut himself. And he can kill people with a non-metal sword.
Right.
So I got to give it to him.
Right. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
But I would say if it was a game of chicken between the two air racers, that it would go to Kevin Bacon.
Oh, he would win for sure. Kevin Bacon would take out James Dean, too.
Oh.
We got to do, like, the all-time greatest chicken racers.
Oh, fantastic.
I would love to see the punch dancing, though, used practically and just use it like a – I mean, Ren would – I think Ren could deliver a punch for sure.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, he did. Didn't he punch that one guy? Wasn't there a fist fight at some point in time?
I don't remember. There had to have been.
Right.
But, I mean, if he did, he won. Maybe it's just
100%.
I just wasn't concerned with it because I knew what would happen.
Right. And again, I think it was I'll punch you in this scene, and we'll be best friends in the next scene because I'll secretly teach you how to dance in your barn.
I'm gonna tell you something, Adam. If someone knew really how to dance in high school and they're like, hey, Mark, you want to learn how to dance? I would have done it happily. Like, I was a boxer back then, too, so I wouldn't have to worry about anything. Like, right. People making fun of me, I'd be like, all right, let's go. You know, I can dance in the barn or I can fight in the barn. But I totally would have been down for dance lessons.
Right. No, 100%. I was in the musical Evita in our high school. We went huge. And we had a dance instructor come in and teach us how to dance for the chorus line. And I remember thinking, like, I can't say out loud that this is cool, but this is pretty cool.
And everyone next to you is thinking it, too.
Yeah.
If one person would have been like, this is sweet, everyone would have jumped in. Does that make
sense? That's amazing.
All right. So this is the big part. Like, we're going to finish this podcast with a bang.
You have no idea.
Like, we're just going to finish it like a sandbag shot, 15 sandbags shot from a trebuchet.
Right.
I mean, when they land, they're going to make a boom.
Oh, my goodness. Are they ever going to make a boom?
So do you want to – so we picked 8 each, right?
Yes.
All right. And then we're going to – what we can do is let's narrow it. We'll pick 8 each, and then we'll pick a winning team of 8. How's that sound?
Okay. That sounds great.
All right, cool. Do you want to start us off?
Okay. So we picked out our greatest – the greatest team of post-apocalyptic heroes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in my list, I stayed away from Mad Max.
Me too.
I figured he was like the quintessential one. It's almost too easy to pick him.
I agree.
Okay. So my first pick is Sam Hell from Hell Goes to Frogtown.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
So he's played by Roddy Piper, so you know he can handle himself. He's got a sweet little samurai sword, and he's the only fertile man left on the planet in his world. And so Sam Hell is my pick to head off my team.
He has been in some great movies between Hell Goes to Frogtown and They Live. Roddy Piper has done been in some pretty good movies.
He's pretty fantastic. I have a DVD of Hell Goes to Frogtown, and when you put it in, the menu comes up and it says Strat movie. They spelled start wrong. So it's got a special place in my heart of just like, they are trying so hard. But the female lead in that movie was the same girl who played Valeria in Conan the Barbarian.
Oh.
So she kind of has this. And Rory Calhoun's in that movie. It's something else.
All right. So if you pick this movie, don't tell me. But that when you said Strat, that reminded me. I thought that reminded me of Cyborg, right? Because aren't the characters in Cyborg named after instruments?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. But I love that I got my post-apocalyptic movies mixed up. So you're going to see a weird – except for one – you're going to see a weird what's the word? There's like a weird – they're all. I picked apocalyptic movies with lots of sand. So that's the common denominator.
Yep.
So my first one is Nick Preston, which is Dolph Lundgren, and it's in The Last Warrior, one of his direct-to-DVD movies.
Okay.
And in this movie, he plays a Air Force captain – who is avoiding a plague in California where your skin becomes boiled.
Ooh, that's gross.
And it's a very boring movie.
Okay.
But it's just Dolph Lundgren surrounded by sand in a post-apocalyptic movie. So I added it.
So it's good. It's good to go in.
Yeah, I had to.
Okay. So for my second pick, this is one of my post-apocalyptic ones that isn't sand-based. but I went for Snake Plissken.
Oh, I had – you know what? He got kicked out for a person I'm going to say later.
Okay, but nobody is – when I say there was no like superhero movies when we were kids, Escape from New York was as close as you could get.
I have a theory about Escape from L.A.
Talk to me.
So in this movie, he surfs. He hang glides. He rides a motorcycle. He's in a submarine. He plays basketball.
He does.
I feel like Triple X and these movies ripped him off. I mean, this is a guy who can hang glide for several minutes 30 feet from the ground. That's impressive.
No, I would defend you in court on that.
He completed the first ever post-apocalyptic I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. But so
Okay.
post-apocalyptic Olympics, and there's like a five event
Oh,
thing.
yeah, no. I always thought a great TV show would be the Walmart Olympics, where you go to the parking lot of Walmart and you just stop two random people. And you say, okay, first one to get me 25 carts, go. Or first one to carry 30, like just all parking lot Walmart-based Olympic stuff, and the winner gets a Walmart gift card.
And you set up a track and have two Geo Metros race around.
Exactly. Walmart Olympics. I think it'd be huge.
All right. So next, I got this is gonna be a weird one, but Arlen from The Bad Batch. I don't know if you've seen this movie. It's
I haven't.
Suki Waterhouse. She is this character who gets put in there because she just did something wrong, and she gets picked up by these cannibals who eat her arm and leg. Jason Momoa is one of the cannibals, so she immediately gets her arm and leg done. She gets a cool leg, she gets an arm, and she just goes around surviving. She meets up with a shady Keanu Reeves. But I'm just saying, any woman who has her
How have I not
arm,
heard of this movie?
yeah, it's on Netflix. So any
I'm gonna watch
woman
it tonight.
who can get her arm and leg eaten, and then to gain a sweet leg, and then just cruise around the desert with Jason Momoa and annoy Keanu Reeves, I mean, that's a survivor right there. You know,
Absolutely.
we have Sam Hell, we have Nick Preston, we have Snake Plissken. I mean, well, Plissken lost an eye, but that was before anything. This
Yeah, that was
woman,
back in Cleveland.
she loses a leg and an arm to cannibals, and she still does a good job.
That's fantastic.
That's respect right there. So
Absolutely.
I got her in that, the Bad Batch. Who you got next?
So this one may be a little left of center, and I maybe he won't make the cut. And I'm okay with that. But I put the Postman
He's a good wrestler.
in. But I think Kevin Costner's Postman character would be a vital asset to our final team because we need to communicate with other tribes.
Yeah.
So I think this guy's desire in a post-apocalyptic world to, like, let's be honest, he stole mail to survive.
Yep.
And then he just went with it.
I mean, he found his niche.
He found his thing.
And then
And
he
so
became a leader.
that's what I see. I see leadership potential in him. And again, I see his willingness to do what it takes to survive, even be something as lame as deliver mail.
And he's a wrestler.
And he's a
They have
wrestler.
a wrestling match at the end.
Yes, they do.
I
They
love
also,
it.
he's fueled by the pain that came from eating his own donkey.
Paul. All right, so next for me is Eden Sinclair from a movie called Doomsday. I don't know if
Okay.
you've seen Doomsday.
I
It
have.
oh you oh, okay. Directed by the guy who did The Descent, and it's just Rhona Mitra going through. Oh, there's not much desert. There's sand, but she's kind of just battling these really Mad Max-esque type people and kicking butt. So
Right.
I appreciate it. I think she, of all of these characters that we're looking at right now, well, Arlen. But see, Arlen got her leg and arm ripped off, and then she kind of like sauntered around for a while. This movie in Doomsday, she's chased for 2 hours. So
So good.
you want someone who can survive a 2 hour chase.
Well, this is the thing. You want to have a team that's going to make the team stronger,
Yeah.
right? And someone who survives like that's going to get the job done.
There's no weakness there with her.
No.
Got it. All right, who you got?
Next, I have Eli from the Book of Eli.
Oh man, how did I not add that?
Right?
How did I not do it?
That movie is a trip to watch. Like it's exhausting because it's so intense. And like the fact that he's a blind Denzel Washington in the desert with two huge knives and a gun, just like going to town. You need to have him on your team.
He's a first drafter.
He's a first drafter, 100%.
I can't believe I didn't even think about it. I was trying to go obscure and I kind of forgot about the main ones.
Yeah, no, I kind of went more mainstream than I'd like to normally, but there's just some people you couldn't ignore.
So my next one is Malcolm Beach, and that's Morgan Freeman from Oblivion, because I just really liked his book collection, and I figure if you're in a post-apocalyptic world, you just need books. And he had a
Yeah.
pretty sweet setup, and he had really cool goggles, so you could wear some cool stuff.
Right.
So that I added him because of his library and his sweet glasses.
Sweet. That's awesome.
There we go.
So every list we try to do, I'm going to try, because this has happened organically, but I think Rutger Hauer needs to make an appearance. So I picked Rutger Hauer's character, Sallow, from Blood of Heroes.
Mm.
Have you seen Blood of Heroes?
I have not.
So on the back of the DVD, it describes the movie. It says, in a Mad Mad-esque world. Like, that's what it says on the movie. So it's this kind of very deserty, sandy thing. But he is a sports legend in a sport called jugging. Jugging. And jugging is essentially football, but it's played with, instead of a ball, a dog's skull. And then the players have bats. So his whole thing is that he's this veteran sports hero leading this band of juggers to win this tournament so that they can gain freedom for this city. It's bananas, but he'd be a great second in command, a grizzled veteran with some leadership skills.
I just want to see him run around with a bat and a skull.
So because of that movie, there is an underground, like, jugging society in, like, real life. Like, you can join a jugging team now.
That sounds horrible.
I know. But they don't play with a real dog skull. They play with an artificial dog skull. So there's a company that makes dog skulls just for this sport.
Do you get hit by bats?
Yes. Yes, you do. They're like cricket bats.
Gee, I'm out. Count me out. I'll sit in the crowd and eat popcorn.
I think we need to get together and go see a live jugging tournament sometime.
Oh, next time I'm up there, we're doing it.
We'll bring our wives and we'll make a day of it.
Oh, they'll love it.
Yes.
All right, so my next one is Alice from Resident Evil Extinction. Just the third one. The third one.
Okay.
The problem is, no, because there's a lot of sand in the third one. So I didn't want to go, because in the first, so if you guys listen on our podcast, we covered all six movies recently, but in the first one, she's in the underground thing. The second one is the city, third one, sand, fourth one, prison, fifth one, inside a place. And then the sixth one, there is desert, but I don't like the sixth one. So no. I'm just saying the third, because she's just out there chilling with rocks. She has the force. She uses an entire force field of fire to wipe out crows. I mean,
yeah.
We're in the desert and we get attacked by zombie crows. We want Alice from this movie.
Those movies did kind of get it a hand, didn't they?
No, you know what's insane? Is I don't know how close you watch them all together. And so I thought they went off the rails with the fourth one. But when you watch them back to back, or like once every other week, they make sense. All six of them make logical sense. I mean, not logical, but the storyline is a through storyline.
Okay. I'll, you know what? I'll revisit them.
I was kind of annoyed, too, because I remember them. I remember the fourth and fifth one. I say this a lot, feeling like fever dreams, but they make sense, and they're my favorite. So it goes 5-4-1-3-6-2 for me.
Okay. I will, before we speak again, watch all of them in succession, and I will say if I agree or disagree with you.
I love it. We'll spend the first opening of the pod, and that'll be a good prompt for everyone to listen to our other podcasts for them. So I listen to every single DVD comic. There's two commentaries on every Blu-ray. So like I know this series way too much. All right.
So in I think the fourth one, remember there's the one scene where there was an upside-down helicopter had fallen down and smashed a car when she came to in her house?
Oh, in the fifth one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I live in an apartment in a little town called Brecon, and my landlord did airplane props. He had a little airplane and helicopter, kind of like Great Boneyard. And so that helicopter was in my front yard for 3 years with Umbrella Corporation on the front of it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, they filmed a lot in Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely they did. It was pretty nifty.
Love it. All right, who you got?
Okay, so I got one that's going to go a little left to center again. I'm going to say Caesar from War of the Planet of the Apes.
Whoa.
Because the first one, it's not a post-apocalyptic movie.
Yeah.
But by the third one, he gets there. And again,
he's a good leader.
The natural-born leader, right? Like, and I think he's going to keep our – in a world where we have the chance of losing our humanity to be these sand dwellers, I think Caesar's a constant reminder of what we need to be, the most human of us all.
That should be the poster. In a world. All right. So after that awesome one you just said, I'm gonna say Ivan, played by Bruce Campbell in Alien Apocalypse. This one isn't a lot of sand, but it's Bruce Campbell fighting aliens in Apocalypse, being nobody other than Bruce Campbell.
I'm going to say he's my first draft pick just because he's Bruce Campbell.
And he just doesn't die.
Right?
Bruce Campbell in these movies takes so much beating, and he's out of his league, and he just somehow finds victory. And he's not a
Now,
leader either, right? Is he a leader?
no, I think he's just a great general.
Got it. I don't think these people would listen to him, but they would want him around because when the dust settles, he's still going to be there.
Right.
Like
Right.
with arm, well, maybe lost an arm, but
Maybe. But
maybe.
do you think Bruce Campbell could coexist with Snake Plissken, knowing they had a run-in in L.A. where he tried to cut out his eye?
Oh man, that'd be tough. I think they're so different, and I don't think either of them is trying. I don't think Snake wants to be the alpha.
No, I don't think Snake wants to be there ever.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, like he never wants to. They gotta put diseases and stuff in him to get him to do his job.
So if they have to team up for like a one-time only affair, he'll do it. But I don't
Right.
think he doesn't care about being the leader.
He's not in this for the long haul.
So I don't think he would be annoyed by Bruce Campbell, and he would be worried about his twin brother who tried to, butcher him.
Right.
But yeah,
Do you
I think
think Snake Plissken would have stayed at the moisture farm?
yes.
100%.
I think Snake Plissken's down for chilling. He would have
Yeah.
drank the water. I mean, he's just really, he just, he gets, you have to understand, he gets thrown into these things. He doesn't want to
Exactly.
do any of them.
No.
Oh, I love
No.
it. I love
Very
it.
good. Okay, who else you got?
All right. So I got a twofer. And
Okay.
did you watch the video I sent you?
Which one was that? You sent me a lot of
I
things.
sent you the trailer with the
Yes,
three
yes.
clips.
Yep.
So back in college, I filmed these trailers and we had a movie called Jackson's Bluff. Then we had another one called Running. And then we had another one called The Brothers Finley, where this movie never hit the theaters, but I just love the idea of it, where it's like in a world where people kill each other for gasoline and there's lots of sand, one man will save them all. And then you go, Jericho! And then it cut to me, like looking really tough. And then it goes, and his glue-huffing convict brother, Hank. And then you cut over to Hank, and he has like a jersey on and a backward hat, and he just kind of shrugs.
Right.
And so you have this very like Mad Maxian kind of intense man, and then you have his brother he's not like a he wouldn't be in jail, but he would still be living in the basement, kind of huffing glue and just being a
Right.
pain.
Right.
Like
He would hang out with Joe Dirt.
yeah, he's the kind of guy that your mom makes dinner for you, and he doesn't put the dishes away or offer to do dishes. Does that
Right.
make sense?
100%.
Or he just takes the dishes and goes downstairs and leaves them down there. So you have Jericho, this shirtless, like angry, he probably goes around causing trouble. Like he's under the guise of, hey, I'm gonna save this village, but he's
But
really just
causes more
looking.
damage than he's worth.
Yeah, so I mean, he'll take the villains out, but it burns a third of the village, where the villains just wanted like a 60th of the village. And then they're all mad at him. But then you have Hank, so it's just Jericho and Hank together, package
All
deal.
right.
They're
I'm in.
alive though. I mean, you are they we these two are in the midst of the apocalypse. Like the apocalypse has already happened, and people are like killing each other for gasoline. And these guys look fine. They're well fed. So I mean, obviously they have a good racket going.
No, for sure. No, I'm in. I think these guys are going to make the cut.
What did you think about the Brothers Finley when you saw it?
I remember thinking, the fact that I don't own this feature on DVD is maybe the biggest crime to humanity.
If you're listening to the podcast, I'll put it on the blog post for the podcast. So go to MFF and you can see this.
That's fantastic. I think for your birthday, I'm gonna make up a marquee poster of Jericho and Hank.
Oh, please do, man. That'd be the greatest day ever. Oh my
Yeah, we'll make it
gosh.
happen.
The Brothers Finley. And at the end, he's like, hey, ladies, you said you wouldn't if I was the last man on Earth. Like, well, now I was trying to test that out.
So good.
He's such a dirtbag.
Right?
And he hasn't, like, he hasn't changed one bit. So, because I'm pretty sure that Jericho does all the work. And no one messes with
Clearly.
Hank. No one messes with Hank because Jericho's there.
No,
So,
Hank is Polly to Jericho's Rocky.
yeah. So he's never, yeah, oh, I love that. Like, he's never changed. He's had no character development. He's just still a dirtbag. But right. He doesn't get Jericho killed. So that means when Jericho's like, stay in the car, Hank would be like, I was going to stay in the car anyway. Or like, fine. Like, he just puts his headphones on.
Right.
Like, he doesn't do anything malicious to hurt Jericho.
He reminds me of John Cryer in Superman 4.
Well, can you refresh my memory?
Well, remember when it was like he was Lex Luthor's nephew?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't remember that.
They made nuclear. Okay. In a normal circumstance, I'd say go watch Superman 4, but never watch Superman 4. But he just plays this like bumbling oaf that if you removed him from the movie, nothing would change. Like, it doesn't affect the movie at all. Yeah. But he's in this as this like this bumbling sidekick to the real, you know, villain that's doing things.
And Hank would not be missed.
No, I think that Jericho's journey stays the same with or without Hank.
Because Hank just never changes.
That's amazing.
Do you have one more left?
I have two more.
Okay.
But I'll do them at the same time.
Okay.
Because you did your two at the same time. So again, I'm again picking somebody off of my list from last time. So I'm saying Cleric John Preston again from Equilibrium.
Got it.
So it's just next level sword fighter. Takes orders well. He's not even a general. He's just a great enforcer. He's like our Achilles. You send him in first draft. Just send him in to kill everybody, and we'll pick up the rest. And then my final pick is specifically John Connor from the future of the first Terminator.
Oh, not the nasty future.
The nasty future. Scarred up face. That's the John Connor I want. And I put them together because they're both Christian Bale.
Those clips of I just love when they go into the future and show that war torn.
It's the best part of those first two movies.
Best part. I love those clips. Oh man, so we have 16. Can I say I really need to have Roddy Piper and Eli. Would you be happy to keep Roddy Piper?
Yeah, no, I think Roddy Piper and Eli, they're first draft picks for sure.
Okay, so we can use them for two of our eight. Because I just love these two. They're kind of first round. Like, who else do you think we should keep in here?
Well, I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to say I'm going to remove right from the get-go the postman. I put him in there thinking he would add something to the team. But seeing what you've brought to the team, I'm going to say let's remove the postman from the equation right away.
Okay, he's gone. And I want to take out Nick Preston, Dolph Lundgren from The Last Warrior. Because
right. When you described the movie as boring, but Dolph Lundgren's there, I was like, I don't know if this guy's going to make the cut.
I pushed it. I kind of pushed it a little bit too much. Like, I don't know. I just added it because Dolph.
Right.
So we just lost two. So we need six more people.
We need to have Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, definitely have Bruce. What about Arlen? She lost an arm and a leg.
Yeah, no, that intrigues me. So I haven't, like I said, I haven't seen that movie, but I'm going to check it out. It reminds me of, remember Rose McGowan with the M16 leg?
Yes, exactly.
So I'm down with that. I want her. I haven't seen the movie, but I trust you enough, Mark, that yes, let's do that.
It's a weird little arty movie, but I just like the fact that she survives what she does. And that speaks a lot to me.
Right.
So we have Sam Hell from Hell Goes a Frogtown. We have Arlen from The Bad Batch, Eli, and Ivan from Alien Apocalypse. So we need four more people to fill out our squad.
So I'm going to say we need some Resident Evil going on here.
Oh, for sure. So we're going to put Alice in there?
I think we definitely need Alice.
We're going to be untouchable with her in there.
100%. Like, it's next level.
The only problem is she can't sleep next to any of us because she doesn't know how to control her powers yet. So she has to stay in a little area further away.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I don't want rocks or motorcycles dropping on me.
No. No, nice. I'm down with that.
So we need three more people.
Right.
Oh, man. I know this is cheating, but do you like Jericho and Hank? Do you want Jericho and Hank in this? Or since no one knows who they are, should we get rid of them?
So here's what I want to say. I want Jericho. I don't want Hank.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's get rid of him.
I get that he's funny and I get it's a joke. This is my survival in a wasteland. And I can't trust that to a guy who's huffing glue.
I wish we could put that as the tagline for this podcast. All right, so we got Jericho from the because he's had to carry a glue-huffing brother and himself.
Right. Imagine him with some competent, like, cohorts.
Oh, my gosh. And he doesn't seem like a leader, Jericho doesn't, either.
No.
Jericho needs a boss.
Right.
Because he can survive with Hank, but he couldn't be part of a crew. unless there was a leader, because Hank would get in his head.
Exactly.
All right, so we have Snake, we have Eden Sinclair, we have Malcolm Beach, Rucker Hauer, Caesar, Cleric John Preston, and John Connor left. Right. Who else can we add?
So I want to say we should either take Caesar or John Connor, because I think we need a definite leader.
I just like the idea of a CGI ape riding around with him.
Right.
Like weirdo factor, right?
Right. It's a flip, because he plays like the animal sidekick, but he's actually the leader.
I think, ooh, that would be perfect, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So we have Jericho, we have Sam Hell, Arlen, Eli, Alice, Caesar, and Ivan. So that leads us with Snake, Eden Sinclair, Malcolm Beach, Rucker Hauer. I'm going to take out Malcolm Beach because we're on a mission. We don't need to be reading lots of books in a den.
Right.
All right, so I'm taking him out. So we have four people left to choose from and one person left. So Snake, Rucker Hauer, Cleric, or John Connor.
Right.
I kind of feel like it should come down to Eden and Rucker, right? Or Salo, because isn't John Connor like a leader?
John Connor, we have Caesar, we don't need John Connor.
Okay, so it comes down to Cleric, John Preston, Rucker Hauer, or Eden Sinclair.
Right, and I don't think we need Rucker Hauer because he's a sports athlete. He's not a real fighter.
Got it.
So, again, when we have someone like Caesar, we don't need this grizzled veteran that's getting us there. So I'm thinking Eden Sinclair is where we need to land.
Is the one we need to keep?
I think so.
I think Cleric is great, but he's... And it is a dystopian future, but I really like the way that Eden can run. And
100%.
She moves the entire film and decapitates people, and she can drive, and she's not exactly a leader.
I'll say this. In a group like this, I don't know if I trust Cleric John Preston.
Got it.
He's not a team player. He's a loner.
Got it. And in Doomsday, she teams up with people.
Right.
Man, this is a gangster squad we have.
I think we have an untouchable... Expendables post-apocalyptic team here.
All right, so we have...
I think the movie's called Expendabled because it's post-apocalyptic.
Expendabled?
Yeah.
So we have Jericho from the Brothers Finley, separated from his brother. What about this? The mission is Hank was kidnapped. Also, there's a water source.
Yes.
So that way, you know, everyone... We need water, and Jericho's like, I need my brother.
Can Hank be slowly throughout the film... be on a timer getting lowered into the water so he's going to drown?
Yes.
Okay. I'm down with it now.
He's like, no, man, he's going to drop glue all up in the water. So we got Jericho. We have Sam Hell, who I just love Roddy Piper running around. Arlen from The Bad Batch. Eden Sinclair from Doomsday. Eli from Book of Eli. Alice from Resident Evil Extinction. Caesar from War of the Planet of the Apes. And Ivan from Alan Apocalypse. I love this list because it's a very good blend of people.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they're, like I said, they're all survivors. They're not going to take this task lightly.
And, you know, in Resident Evil Extinction, Claire, Ellie Larder's character, is really the boss. So Mila just acts just fine with that crew. So she's a team player.
Right.
Jericho's fine because he wants to save his brother. Sam Hell is just, he's not a leader. He's just a big brawny dude. Arlen, she just seems pretty chill. So, I mean, we have a really good crew here I think the main problem is going to be Caesar and Ivan.
Yeah, but I think Caesar is coming at it from a different point of view, being an ape.
Got it.
Right, he's going to be the one that has compassion, saying his whole thing, War of the Planet of the Apes, was we need to be friends with the human. We need to get back to our own humanity, and I think that's where he's going to center the group as he leads.
Well, like he's going to be angry about it at first, right? And then he's just going to be like, all right, like this guy's a good leader.
Absolutely,
man. We nailed it. This was fun.
Perfect.
All right, and the next one we're going to talk about Reign of Fire.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Which is my favorite Dragon Tank movie.
Skydiving Dragon Tank movie.
Yes.
Axe wielding. All right, this was awesome. Yeah, dude, thanks for coming on. Also, make sure to, I guess, if you're listening, head to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Go to iTunes. Make sure to give us a rate and review. Let us know what you think. Watch Reign of Fire. Send us in any questions. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Adam Hodgins, make sure to check out his novellas. They're great. This is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week. Bye.